Hello, and welcome to the Immersive Chemistry Podcast, a podcast which examines the intersection of chemistry, chemical engineering, game design, educational sciences, and technology. In each episode, we explore the impact of immersive learning research on these fields through interviews and discussions. As always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jesse. Jesse, how are you today?
I'm doing fine, Tim. Thank you. I'm still inside my house, working from home. But yeah. Still good.
Yeah, lockdown in Belgium, and there's also quarantine here in the Netherlands. This is our sixth episode today. I think that's right. We've recorded seven, but one didn't work out quite quite like we'd planned. But Jesse, it's kind of a special episode because today we're actually going to be discussing some work that you've been doing, and in fact, you've published an app on the Google Play Store. And maybe you can tell us about that application.
Yeah, that's correct. So I published that actually a while ago, before we went to the networking event in Darmstadt. I was working on that because, well, I'm not sure if I have said this before, but as a chemist, I was not trained to work on programming languages and try to build something in new technologies. So I decided to start doing an application in order to for me to get involved in the field and also to get a feeling of how can I implement and use these technologies for my own research. So that's the reason why I decided to start with the application. And basically, what does the app do? It's very simple. So basically, if you download your application in your phone, you will be able to see a user interface in which you have different options. So one option is to download a marker, which is just an image, which you will have to print yourself. And if you use your phone in front of this image, you will be able to display something from the screen. And what you will see, it's a TV, which you have different buttons. And then each time you press a button, you will be able to see a video inside the application. So the difference from a normal application compared to augmented reality is that this TV is a 3D object. It's not just a 2D screen, but with augmented reality, you are able to see the TV in a 3D model. And then inside the TV, you see the videos. So it was a kind of experiment for me to see if a marker would be a good idea to use it in a class, or how hard was it to display a 3D object and the stability of the 3D object, etc. So that was one of the things that I was experimented with. And also about the phone and if this really makes sense for someone that wants to learn something new in the phone, etc. So that was more or less the idea.
Okay. And where does the application sort of fit within your broader research project?
Well, I was trying to see, well, so my research is focused on understanding if augmented reality can improve the way students learn abstract concepts. So the application really fits into the exploring exactly that. So what is augmented reality? How does augmented reality looks like, in this case, in a phone? And if this really can be explored to learn abstract concepts. So for example, if you can see, I don't know, a molecule with the phone, then does it really make sense? How does the technology, or what are the characteristics of the technology help to learn these abstract concepts? So this was kind of the start of my project. So trying to experiment with this and see if this is really possible or doable or not. Which I found a lot of literature about it. So there are a lot of applications that you can see actually a molecule with this the same marker. The difference with my application is that you see a TV, which you have videos. But if you go and download another application, you are able to see with the same marker, maybe a molecule, which can help in the chemistry education, let's say.
And what is the content? Maybe you could share with the listeners what actually content is contained within the experience.
Yeah, so the content that I decided to create, and also I learned from that, you know, to use the video editing software, etc. So I create different videos to explain titration. And then in the application, you are able to see it in a kind of a scaffolding way. So instead of seeing a whole video of 6 minutes explaining the whole process, the TV allows you to stop step by step and try to understand more deeply each step during the process of titration.
I thought that it was an interesting way of displaying that information. And we had Serkan on earlier, maybe in episode 2 or 3, I think it was, and he was also working on an application. So it's good to see the researchers at KU Leuven really are starting to publish things this early in the project. Did you find anything difficult about the process at all?
Well, actually, I found why this has not been used broadly maybe in the chemistry education, because you require some knowledge about software, you know, like the content itself. I have to learn from scratch how to download, for example, a software platform which I can program the application. I have to learn how to publish it in the Google Store. So the journey in order to do that is not that easy, especially if you are not in the field. So for me, everything was new. And I can imagine that a professor or a teacher will have the same journey, and it is difficult to do it from scratch. So you need people from other disciplines in order to do it, and that might be hard. So that's one of the things that I find very, very challenging in the beginning. So I can imagine if someone wants to use it, like a professor of chemistry in a university or in high school, etc., wants to use one of these applications and there is nothing available, he or she would have to learn everything from scratch, and that's a very hard journey. I think that Serkan mentioned something similar. So one of the problems right now is the content. There are not such easy tools, to the authoring tools, in order to create these classes. It requires a lot of knowledge about it. And I am very lucky to have the time, but I can imagine there are a lot of people that really wants to use them and see the value, but it's hard to get started with.
And do you have something in mind for a follow-up to this? Are you maybe publishing an article about it? Or what are sort of the next steps as it relates to this application and even just generally in your research?
Yeah, so with the application, I found out that there are a lot of characteristics that are different from regular tools. So, for example, in order to someone be able to use these applications, we'll have to design it in the proper way in order for the student to find it easy to follow. So one of the things that I decided to do with this application was to explore what does the users think about it, because it was more intuitive for me how I did it, but I found it a lot of information about the user experience in the Google Store. So one of my plans now, and I'm actually working on that, it's extracting the reviews of the applications to see what the users really think about the current status of the applications. And with this information, so what did they think from Google Play Store, I will try to design my own with the guidelines of the user experience, because I believe that maybe the technology is developing, etc., but if you don't design it in the right way, might be a disadvantage in the long run to implement it. So I'm wanted to focus on the design perspective, to design something that it's easy to follow. And then from there, I will continue the research to see if there are characteristics that will help or not to learn abstract concepts. So for example, the visualization, the realism that can these tools bring, the mobility, if you can move with the phone, does that give any advantage to the learning, etc.
Okay, yeah. One of the first things I think about when I see the integration of technology with the learning experience, which is really exactly what you've done with this app, is something called the SAMA model. And the SAMA model is a framework that was created by Dr. Ruben Puente Dura. I'm not sure, he might be Mexican. I'm not sure if that's a correct pronunciation. But basically, this framework helps us think about how technology interacts with learning. And he saw that some educational technologies or tools that we have access to very clearly can have an impact on the things and the ways people learn. But he also recognized that perhaps there isn't anything intrinsically in the tool itself that leads to the learning. And instead, it is the practice associated with the use of this tool or the use of this educational technology which makes the difference. So the SAMR model, it's an acronym, it's S-A-M-R, and it stands for substitution, augmentation, modification, and redefinition. Now, the substitution refers to a technology which acts as a direct substitution with no functional change. So, for example, we might ask our students to use a Microsoft Word document as a substitute for paper and pencil. Or we might use Google Forms or Microsoft Forms to create an exam, a multiple choice exam, instead of a traditional multiple choice test, which again might normally be carried out using a paper and pencil. So that's the first sort of level, it's the substitution. Then we go to augmentation. And this is where in a task, the technology not only substitutes the tool, but it also adds some functionality. So thinking about Microsoft Word again, the spell check and the grammar check, those features of the program that enhances the functionality of the tool, which in the traditional sense would have been a pencil and paper. So it directly substitutes paper and pencil and enhances it by providing the learner with this option to check their spelling and grammar automatically. So this is a functional improvement. Now, if we think about, again, using Microsoft Forms as an example and doing an exam online, the ability to automatically check and mark the multiple choice exam is another example of that functional improvement. And that functional improvement is key to the augmentation level of the SAMR model. Now, the third level is modification. And this is where the technology allows for significant redesign of the task. To illustrate this, again, with the Microsoft Word example, I think since around 2013, Word has allowed multiple people to edit and contribute to a document collaboratively, leaving comments and making suggestions, things like this. Now, including this type of collaboration in the learning task design, this is an example of a task which reaches the modification level on that SAMR model. The ability to collaborate online in real time with people, you know, potentially all over the world, it is a significant redesign of the task. And that's why it does reach that modification level. The final stage is the redefinition level. And this is where the technology itself completely allows for the redefinition of the task and allows for the creation of new tasks, which were previously inconceivable. And perhaps here is a good time to, instead of using the boring example of Microsoft Word, actually provide an example directly related to chemistry, chemical engineering. And we can do that by thinking about the visualization of molecules and the ability to create new molecules in a virtual space. And I think this is a good example of an educational technology being able to reach the redefinition stage. So this is where the task can involve an actual visualization of a molecule, which in no way can, not in the same way can that be done using paper and pencil.
And it's funny that you mention it, because actually that's one of the things that brought me to the project. Because in my journey as a chemist, I was specialized in synthesizing molecules and trying to figure how I can design a molecule in order to bind it in a protein. That was very hard, you know? And the fact that I was able to see these tools, the fact that the virtual reality, you can visualize the protein, and then from there you can kind of, you know or design the structure-wise, it was breathtaking, because compared to what we'd done before in a 2D screen trying to see this structure, then once we have it in virtual reality, it was so much easier. And that was a big step for organic chemists.
Yeah, it's interesting to see what different things are the trigger for people to really realize the power that some of these technologies have. And I think it's also important to say that something like the SAMR model, and actually like with many models in educational theory, they tend to look hierarchical. So we were just saying that it's breathtaking to see the ability to redefine the way that we can visualize a molecule. But there's also value in those sort of the other areas. So also in the substitution or the augmentation levels as well. if we think about, I'm not sure if you're aware of Bloom's taxonomy, but it's an educational theory, and it's portrayed in visually using a pyramid. So with remembering at the bottom, followed by understanding, followed by applying, analyzing, and then at the top of the pyramid you have evaluating, and then the very top you have creating. And we can interpret this to mean that remembering is the least important part of that taxonomy, and creating is the most important part. However, another way to look at it is that, and maybe it's more productive, I think it's probably more productive to look at it like this, is that all of these stages in the taxonomy are important, and they're important in different ways. And to get this point across, it's sometimes called a holarchy instead of a hierarchy. So it's more of a holistic way of thinking about it. And I think it's the same with the SAMR model. I don't think we always need to reach this redefinition level, even though that's the breathtaking part of it. Sometimes substitution is enough. So sometimes even augmentation is all we need to do to get the job done. But it is of course worth thinking about getting to the higher levels. And Dr. Puentedura even says that, you know, people need to feel comfortable with the tools we use in the classroom, the tools we're using during seminars or lectures, or even in trainings at the workplace. So there's nothing wrong with beginning at this substitution level or augmentation level. And it's even probably the case that it's good to get comfortable at these levels before trying to design a task at a higher level. And I think that's really what you've done with your app. I think you've done a good job at designing something at an augmentation level of the SAMR model, which allows teachers, trainers, lecturers to really get a taste of what this whole augmented reality thing is and what role it can play in the classroom. And then they can start to consider integrating technologies at higher levels and really changing the design of their tasks. And maybe even starting eventually with the modification and then the redefinition to really see how they can change what learning happens in their classrooms.
Yeah, and it's very interesting how you mentioned it, because actually while I was designing the application, by doing that, you know, through the process of designing, I was asking myself, what are exactly the things that can help through the class? But unless someone tries it, you know, in a real class, then it will be giving me some hints about how these tools actually can help. So,
yeah, I think it's important to be able to see how a certain tool is being used in the classroom, how the students are using it, and also, of course, the lecturers and so on. I know actually not long ago we tried out a program that really was, I think, at that redefinition level, and it was called NanoMe. And this is a tool that was, it enabled the visualization of very complicated molecules and even the collaboration and creation of molecules. Do you maybe want to talk on that as a chemist, I guess?
Yeah, sure. You mean the one that we try in the arcade?
Yeah, that's right. So VRcade in Leuven had a demonstration organized for us as part of our project. And yeah, all of us got to go. And I was particularly interested in the stories you were telling me about how it could be applied to your previous work.
Yeah, well, what I previously did was designing molecules in order to treat breast cancer. So I was working with that. So in that journey, what you normally do in the field was to have in the 2D computer the protein structure. And from the structure in the computer, you have to design the molecule, of course, with calculations, etc., and interaction of molecules. So you have to do that exercise by using a 2D model in the 3D model in a 2D computer. But when we went to the arcade, what I was able to see in the experience in virtual reality was that instead of having the 3D model of the protein in a 2D computer, now I was able to see it in 3D, you know, with the virtual goggles. And that change helped me to understand more about the structure itself. Because when you are in a 2D computer, you are not able to see the whole structure and you sometimes miss some of the characteristics of the protein or the structure. But when you are in a 3D model, then you are able to see other things that you were not able to see before. Because you can interact with it, you can stretch it, you can make it bigger. And just the fact that you are able to interact with the model, then you can realize new things. And that was the difference that I really highlight when we were in the arcade. Like now, just by this fact, it can help a lot in order to make these connections and this reasoning behind the designing of a molecule.
So if you're working on creating a new molecule, is it often the case that you need to work with other people?
Yes, exactly. So that's another point, and that's also very interesting. So you imagine that I do my calculations in my computer, I decided that this molecule might help, but then I have to explain this to others. You know, normally in pharmaceutical companies, you have a group of people that are discussing about this, and then this gives an extra step, because once you decide which molecule you will design, then you have to explain it to others and show them the interactions that you saw and how you reason this thing. But then maybe that's also very hard because you have to explain how you see it in a computer to other people. And in the virtual reality environment, you are able to do that at the same time because the people are seeing the same molecule that you are seeing at the same time, and you can both interact with the molecule. So that also gives an extra saving time, let's say, and also maybe to be sure that you are showing what you want to show because the other person is looking at the same thing.
It seems like something that is probably valuable to industry today. It doesn't seem like, well, I'm not sure, but the way you're describing it, it really does seem like something that companies can get value from, and it doesn't necessarily need much more development. Obviously, it can get better. Would you agree with that? Do you think this is sort of a product ready for market, let's say?
I think so. I think that, and I'm actually pretty sure that pharmaceutical companies are using it right now because this really has a value for them. They are really changing the way they work.
And what about in universities? Is this something that you think might help as an undergraduate or even in your master's program? Would you see something like NanoMe being a valuable thing that lecturers could give to their students to help them understand abstract concepts? Which that was your related to your research question, I think. So is this something that could help?
Definitely, because imagine the same thing. Instead of explain something to someone and then this other someone has to read it in a book and then try to make their own visualization, etc. Imagine now that you are in a classroom with a professor and you are teaching something and the students are seeing at the same time that you are talking the same thing. So then you reduce the disadvantage of misinterpretation of this abstract concept, which really makes a difference when you really have to understand something such complex. Like if you are telling, okay, look at this molecule, this is how it looks like, you don't have to imagine it or you don't have to represent it in your mind anymore. You have it here. And then at the same time, you are explaining exactly what you want them to learn. I think that's, you know,
I think one of the challenges in all of this as it relates to a technology and an experience is that the experts of chemical engineering and chemistry education might not be fully aware of what's available to them as a way to communicate the ideas that they're trying to communicate. They're confident using the techniques and tools they've used for many years in the past, and it's quite a risk to sort of change up the way that you're going to be teaching things. And at the same time, somebody like me who's more focused on the learning aspect of things and the educational technology aspect, I don't have the content knowledge to really understand what is valuable for an undergraduate chemical engineer. I probably have a good idea about what is valuable for a trainee teacher because I was a teacher in the past. So I think this is one of the key challenges that educational technology and academic teaching has, and even at schools, high schools and primary schools, is that there's a separation between the content expert and then the instructional design expert, let's say. And I guess, again, we've probably said it a few times on the podcast, that's something that the Charming Project is really trying to sort of build a bridge between those two areas.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that.
So the name of that program is NanoMe. So you can go to nanome.ai to check it out. They have a free personal use. It seems to be on all of the VR headsets. They've got an academic license, $200 annually, and then the commercial pricing. And there's different things for that. But it's probably worth checking out if you are interested in this type of thing. And here at the top of their page, they've actually said, NanoMe is helping out schools and companies impacted by COVID-19. So it is interesting to think about, particularly in these times, how these technologies are going to be changing the way we work and learn post COVID-19, let's say.
Yeah.
Well, Jesse, listen, thank you very much for sharing your insights around the development of your application. It's really good to hear you you talk about the sort of experience that you had. Is there anything else you'd want to add before we finish up for this episode?
Invite everyone to download the application, give me feedback about what they think. I'm really interested in seeing what people think about this new technology. So it will be great if you can try my application.
And maybe you can tell everybody the name of the application.
Yeah, so I call it Science on TV because I have a TV, as I explained, and you can download in Google Play Store. It's an early access because I decided to still improving it in the future, so I didn't release it ultimately, but you can download it if you have an Android phone.
Okay, Jesse, thank you for that, and thank you again for the interesting conversation. I've really been enjoying these podcasts. Okay, so everybody should go and download that application if they have an Android phone and provide feedback. And that brings us to the end of our episode number 6 of the Immersive Chemistry Podcast. I hope everybody has enjoyed this. If you want to see and learn more about the Charming Project, you can visit the Charming website at www.charming-etn.eu. And there's also more information about Jesse's app there and also Serkan's app. So thank you, everybody, and goodbye. The Charming Project has received funding from the European Union's Framework Programme for Research and Innovation through the Horizon 2020 Grant Agreement.